Welcome back to Stand-Up Comedy Secrets for Beginners. I'm Ron Temple, and I'm here again with leading stand-up comedy expert Steve Roy. Okay, Steve, we begin again, and I want to start with this question that we're all just waiting for the answer for. It's how does a comedian progress in stand-up comedy?
Well, if you're talking about how they advance through the ranks, I can give you, you know, a basic idea of what the different positions are, the titles are, and how you get to those titles. The process of getting to anywhere in stand-up comedy can be different for everyone. So I want to just put that out there. You know, it can be faster for some people, slower for some people. It just depends where they're living. You know, are they in a major metro area where they can get a lot of not only stage time, but gigs and those kinds of things. So let's start at the bottom. Most everybody starts out as an open mic comedian. And, you know, they're going to comedy open mic nights. And they're trying to develop their act to move to the next level. And the next level is opening act. And as a general rule, and this applies to basically all stand-up comedy, where you're at in the business depends on how much time you can do. And how well you can do the time that you can do, if that makes sense.
Well, when you say time, you're talking the amount of material they have.
Yeah, time on stage.
3 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes on stage.
Exactly. Now, open mic comedians are usually tasked with doing 3 to 5 minutes. Now, the exception to that is when someone's doing well and they're really starting to nail the audiences, they can end up getting more time. They can end up getting 7 minutes, 9 minutes, 10 minutes, something like that, just as an open mic comedian, which is a really good indicator that they're about to move to the next level if they're able to do that kind of stuff. Because
you were also saying that not only do they get a little more time, they're moved to the front of the...
Oh, yeah, the first half. They'll be in the first half where there's of an open mic night where the most audience is there.
And that's the good indication that they're progressing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, the first rung on the ladder is opening act. And the opening act is usually required to do 15 minutes or less. Usually in the 10 or 15 minute range. And they're supposed to come up and warm up the audience and those types of things. And so that's what they can do. And let me just say this about not just the opening acts, but feature acts and headline acts and those kinds of things. In stand-up comedy, it's no different than any other occupation or endeavor that you have in life. There are people that have a title that are really fantastic at what they do in that title. And then there's people that aren't as fantastic, but they've got the basics to have that title. Am I making sense here? I'm just saying that there's different levels of comedians who can generate different levels of laughter.
Right. And we take it to the real world, and we have individuals that are promoted into a position that they're not absolutely prepared for that position.
Well, I'm just going to tell you.
They have all the qualifications.
Like, for example, headliner level comedians. There are headliner level comedians that'll blow your socks off. And there's also headliner level comedians that don't necessarily do that, but they're funny, if you get where I'm coming from.
Now, so some that create belly laughs that last forever, and then there's others that just are funny. Good quality.
You know, they're still able to generate 4 to 6 laughs per minute, but not at the same intensity level as some. I mean, this is no different than anything else in life. You know, you walk into a job, and there's people that are really fantastic at their job. They know what they're doing, lickety-split. They're skilled. They're talented. And then there's other people that don't quite fall into that category, for lack of a better term. So I need to say that up front. So the first rung is the opening act. Many times the opening act is also the MC, meaning to say that they're introduced. They come on stage. They do their anywhere from 5, 10, 15 minutes of stand-up comedy material. And then they're tasked with introducing the next comedian. And then when that comedian is done, they come back on stage and introduce the headlining comedian. So that's part of the whole opening act type of thing. So the time requirements that you need for an open mic performance is, like I said, up to 15 minutes. Now, let me go back to the open mic comedian. It would behoove the open mic comedian to be able to demonstrate that they can do more than just 3 minutes or 5 minutes in the open mic scene. So what I'm saying is a comedian could come on, they do their 3 minutes, and then they come on the next time for that open mic, and they do a different 3 minutes and kill.
Whoever's paying attention sees that they have at least 6 minutes.
Well, that says 6 minutes. I mean, they'll just have to, you know, continue to develop their material, and then it needs to be at a certain quality level. Now, I will say something about an opening act, a couple of things about the opening act spot. You can have situations where, depending upon how the comedy show is set up, where the opening act, the middle or feature act, and the headliner are all headliner-level comedians. They don't just necessarily have to be that lower-rung person. So just because you hit the level of headliner, you can wear that title, doesn't mean you won't be opening, right. Won't be an opening act. Like for example, you know, you get to a certain level, people that open for major comedians and major bands and other major acts, those people they might be in the opening act spot, but they're not opening act people. These are headliners that come out to prepare that audience for the main attraction, the main act. So, but I'm just talking about the regular rung. So there you go. So that's opening act. The feature act or the middle act, they need to be able to do anywhere from 20 to 30 minutes. As the industry standard is, you need to be able to do a solid 30 minutes on stage. And that's feature act. That's your whole feature act thing. And then the headliner is someone who has progressed from feature act to headliner, and they're able to do 45 minutes to an hour plus on stage. They're able to entertain the people at a high level. Oh, the other thing I was going to tell you about opening act, which is kind of important for new comedians, I think it's important for new comedians, is that it doesn't matter what level you are in the business, the opening act has the hardest job. And the reason they have the hardest job, and they won't get the same laughs they can with the same material if it, in the next show they're a headliner, is because a brand new audience is an accumulation of different types of people from different places and that kind of stuff. And they don't know what to expect. They haven't been introduced to the show. That audience is cold.
And that's the idea of warming up.
Exactly, exactly. That is.
So they're still finding their seat and getting their drink and listening to him.
Right. People are still getting settled. And so as an opening act, you got to be able to play with that and that kind of thing. But the opening act's job is to lead the way for the rest of the show. That's really what the opening act is there to do. They're there to warm up that audience. You will find that TV programs for years, comedy TV programs that involve a live audience, almost invariably have a warm-up act. And they get that audience warmed up before they start doing the TV show.
What you're saying is that they actually use stand-up comedians in these even game shows and stuff to get the audience prepared for that show before they air, right?
Well, everyone knows that a warm audience is a lot easier to work with than an audience that's, I mean, think about it. This audience is this accumulation of people that don't know each other. They don't have any similar experiences or whatnot. They're all just kind of sitting there and they don't know what to expect. They don't know what the comedian's going to do. And so you go out there as the opening act, And you get them going. If you can get them going and it relaxes them, they're more apt to laugh on the other acts. The important thing to remember is like I said, you can go out and do a really high level act and not get the same response if it's an opening spot than you would if you were in the middle spot or in the headliner spot. Just because of this one thing. I mean, be doing the exact same material. Don't get me wrong.
No, I hear that, and you're right, because, you know, the feature act, quite often, you know, that's where you see where you start seeing it really hitting as far as the audience united under, you know, the same flag, basically. They're all laughing at the same jokes, and that opening act, it's struggling. still was struggling a little bit, basically because that's what he's doing, is warming him up. But I've seen some really funny opening acts, like you said. I've seen definitely headliner-level comedians doing opening, and you could really see the difference. But I wanted to go back to that, because opening and feature, you can actually be there and not actually be headliner material, especially in some of the lesser.
Let me just put it this way. The expectations are lower for the opening act than they are for the feature act. And they're lower for the feature act than they are for the headliner, if that makes sense. Now, I'm not saying that impacts laughter, but because you can go out and nail them at any spot, as an opening act, a feature act, or a headliner, doesn't matter. You can nail that audience. Doesn't matter. But do you understand what I'm saying here?
No, I get it. And that's part of the progression, too. You're probably, as an opener, you're probably not going to open a huge act, but you're going to be able to open. You can continue to make a couple of dollars or make some money while you're progressing to the feature act status and again, on to headliner. Correct?
Well, let me tell you how important I believe the intensity of your act, the laughter generation power of your act, plays a big factor into this. One of the things that allowed me to move along pretty darn quickly as a comedian was, as an opening act, there were a number of feature acts that couldn't follow me. As the opening act, meaning to say, I'd come on stage, bam, I'd nail them, and the feature act couldn't equal that. Now, I'm also going to tell you that as a feature act, I would get out there and could nail it, and there were headliners that couldn't follow me. So, and this led to a progression, and I'll get to this, but I'll give you an example of what happened. I had one comedy competition, and I went out, and I started out basically in the feature spot, the middle act spot, not the opener act spot, at the improv, and it really gave me good experience and that kind of stuff. Well, I started doing opening act spot out at Comedy Nights, which was out there by Camp Pendleton. And I started out as an opening act there, and let me just say this, on more than one occasion, I would go out there and open that show, and the feature act couldn't follow me. And so when that particular organization opened up a comedy club called Checkers, the one I talked about before that was near Dick's Last Resort down the Gaslight District, well, the manager from the Oceanside store was tasked with being the manager for the new comedy club. And he really liked me and that kind of stuff. And so, he knew what I could do. And so I started down at Checkers as a feature act. You see what I'm saying?
Right. That he already knew that you could handle the feature.
Oh, absolutely. And then, when I got in heavily into headlining, as I progressed and did more feature work, there were headliners that would have difficulty following me. Now, here's the thing that I noticed, and this was for me. I could go out there and pound an audience as a feature act, just pound them. And if the headliner was a pro and they had a super solid act, they loved what I did because that got that audience going and they could just capitalize on that and take it further with their experience, the time they have on stage, all that stuff. The problem was when I'd go out and nail them as a feature act and the headliner wasn't as strong as they needed to be to follow me because the audience expectation is higher.
Right.
And so that helped me get into headlining. And I'll talk about that a little more as we go along. But the big brass ring in stand-up comedy is becoming a headliner comedian. That means that you can nail an audience for 45 minutes to an hour or more. And that's where the more money is in stand-up comedy, is being a headliner-level comedian.
Right. Now, I'm going to go back to the feature act because I've been there. I've seen this. That once you do kill for a feature act and then you do not have a strong headliner, they often get it's really can be, the audience can get really rude really quick. And that's really tough. You know, in other words, the expectation was that this person coming on should be funnier or keep the level up at least. and then the audience turns on them.
Well, I told you about that instance that I had at the Ventura Concert Theater where I was the feature act. I did my 30 minutes, nailed it, got off stage, and the headlining comedian couldn't do 25 minutes and had walked most of the room. I mean, it was, yeah, that was just amazing. But, you know, there's other things like that that happened too. I mean, after I had gotten established at 4th and B, I could go in when they were doing a comedy show and say, hey, would you let me do a guest set? And most of the time they would say, just if the headliner says you can, that's great. And so basically what that means is there would be this packed 1,000 to 1,500 people and I could go out and do 10 minutes of material. You know, I didn't get paid for it, but I was a special guest.
And the headliner, the headliner kind of liked that.
Well, they could like that. You know, I was a strong comedian. I could go out there and deliver the goods. And if their stuff was dialed in, man, they could just ride that wave. They could just take it and just go. But I'll tell you what happened at 4th and B. I go in on a show. They have one set up. And I don't know if they still do these kinds of shows or whatever. They had the most terrible setup. What they would do is they'd have an opening act, a feature act, and then an intermission. And then the opening act would come back out and do another period of time. And then the headliner would come on. I mean, it was a terrible setup for a comedy thing because you don't want an intermission. All you need to do is keep that show between an hour and 15 minutes to 90 minutes maximum. And the reason you do that is because after people have been drinking refreshing adult beverages, after 90 minutes, they need to go pee.
Yes.
And then when that gets too bad, they're not thinking about your show. They're just thinking about the line that they're going to have to stand in to relieve themselves. So you really want to have your comedy shows tight. Well, so I come in this one evening. I did not know anyone that was on the bill. I didn't know the opening act. I didn't know the feature act. I didn't know the headliner. But I came in and said, hey, is there a spot for me for, could I get a guest set tonight? And they said, check with the headliner. So I went and checked with the headliner. Never met him before, but he was a nice guy. And he went, yeah, sure, man. You can do some time. I said, I'm only going to do 10 minutes. I'll be on and off. And so the opening act was thankful. He was like, okay, so I don't have to go out and try to round this audience up. Because after an intermission, man, everybody's up and they're walking around and they're talking and it becomes this nightmare to get them dialed in. That's why I hate intermissions. It just totally interrupts the show. So here we go. It's the end of the intermission. This guy's on stage for 2 or 3 minutes, rounding people up, telling them the show's starting now, yada, yada, yada. And then he introduces me. So I go out there for 10 minutes. And people are still walking around, that kind of stuff. And it just, in minutes, I just had them. I was nailing it. I had this whole crowd was in their seats watching what I was doing. I just had them. Bang! Did my 10 minutes, got off. The opening act comes out. Opening act /MC comes out. He goes, okay. And he does the introduction for the headliner. The headliner comes out. And to make a long story short, most of the people walked out before the end of his show. Now, in retrospect, I will tell you this. Had I seen him perform and knew what type of performer he was, I would have never asked for a guest set on his show because I would have known that he couldn't follow me. Not that he wasn't funny. It wasn't about that. It was just he wasn't as funny. That's the deal. And I'm not trying to build myself up or anything like that. It's like I said earlier, this is kind of the way it goes. There's people out there that are at different levels, no matter what title they hold. And I felt badly for the guy. Because I basically ruined his show.
Now, he understood that too once people started getting up and walking out. I mean.
Well, sure. Well, keep this in mind too, is comedy club managers have a real good feel for people who are stronger than other folks. I'll tell you what I've seen. I've seen people replaced. I've seen headliners replaced in the middle of a week. They got hired. They can't follow the middle act. they'll get somebody else in there that can. I've seen that. That happens.
Now, does it ever happen where the middle act, you know, the feature act gets, you know, like I said, midweek, you go, oh, my God, this guy, they're not cutting it. Just flip him. Bring him down as a feature.
It could happen. I could see that happening, especially in a place like Las Vegas. I mean, boy, there is just no tolerance for shenanigans in Las Vegas.
They gotta want be tight. Gotta be
oh,
tight.
Man, it's got to be tight. It not only does it have to be tight, it has to be on time. You need to be really cognizant of your time. Because when they tell you, okay, you're going to do 17 minutes, you need to be off in 17 minutes.
Walking away.
Oh, man, I'm just telling you, they don't put up with none of this going overtime or going undertime. That'll get you canned in a minute. When they want 15 minutes, they want 15 minutes. Period.
Well, I've been fortunate to see the back side of that, and you know, the flashlights and the signals, and there's really, you know, if you're not paying attention, you could really get in trouble.
Well, you know, and I've seen people go to the point where they had to shut off the microphone and physically remove somebody who couldn't get off stage. I mean, that is just, to me, that is sad, you know. It's like, wow, you just saw the handicapped of this business right there. Yeah. And you need to stick to your time, you know. And obviously, you know, we're talking about progression here in stand-up comedy. Obviously, there needs to be a constant development of material in order to get to these various levels. I mean, you've got to constantly develop material. Now, if you keep this in mind, if an individual is able to develop just 5 killer minutes a month, just 5, that's an hour a year. And in the beginning, it's going to be a while before you get to perform for an hour. you know, so, I mean, it's just a matter of getting this on. And once you show people that you're not just a one-trick pony, you don't just do the same 3 minutes or 5 minutes every time you come on stage. It matters. You know, that's why comedians, especially new comedians, need to get their solid material down and then go for other material that's solid too, so that they can put these different pieces together in order to have the opening act time, the feature act time, the headliner time. And every gig is different, you know, what they require you to do. I've done opener stuff that only required me to do 5 or 10 minutes and get paid really good for it. I've done feature act stuff that required as little as 15 minutes, you know, but usually, you know, between 15 and 30 minutes is what you have to do. And then there's headliner stuff that can, you know, you can end up doing an hour if you're given the time. Usually the minimum is about 45 minutes. But that's the thing, that you need the time, and that time that you do needs to produce laughter at a certain level in order to move ahead. And like I said, my big advantage that I had was there were people out there that couldn't follow me, and it was noticed.
Well, and I was just going to say, the 5 minutes we're talking about a month, the 60 minutes a year, really has to be tight. I mean, that has to be the 4 to 6 laughs per minute tight.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And like I said, there's people at different levels and, you know, different intensities as far as their laughter goes. But, yeah, the tighter your act is and the more laughs that you generate, the more your opportunities go up. I mean, it's just – it's directly proportional.
And everything we've talked about in this series so far is that's where we're leading a person to, is a tight, funny, 4 to 6 laughs per minute act that will get them progressing to headliner status a lot quicker than it would be if they didn't understand the process.
Well, I'm just going to tell you right now, it doesn't have to take many months or years to be funny on stage. It can take time to develop a reputation, to have people, the right people, see you and notice that you're not just doing the same act every time you come up for your 5 minutes at an open mic night. And you're killing every time you come up at an open mic night. People need to realize that, man, The speed at which you can do that is directly related to the speed at which you can get paid in this business. And you want to talk about sweet. Now, here's a thing. We're talking about an addictive thing that you can do and actually get paid for it, and it's legal? Goodness. Now, there's the apex right there.
Yeah, and, you know, it is a, and I'll say this from my experience in the classroom, is it is addicting. Once you get those laughs, once you feel that, as you say, on a roll, I call it in my zone. I hit that zone, and it is something that it's quite remarkable. And if you can figure out a way to do that consistently, you're valuable. People want to pay you for that talent.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And that's the thing, and that's what I think people need to strive to do quickly, as opposed to slowly.
Right.
Because what happens is there's an excitement, there's a momentum that develops when you can nail it, and then you know you can produce the material, and then you can go back and nail it, and then you can go back and do new material, and then you can nail it. There is a momentum there, undeniable momentum. But if if people are having to struggle, and it's a hit and miss thing, and mostly a miss thing, how long are you going to do that for before you go, you know what, this is kind of sucking, and I'm not really liking the sucking.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have that fun factor that I really, really need.
Well, that's what amazes me about so many stand-up comedians that tell the story, that it took them years and years before they got a break or they got the position that allowed them to get paid. And you know, how long can you jump in front of an audience and suck? That, you know, this has got to be, because the opposite side, even though that wonderful honor roll kind of position is addicting, the few times that I've felt the experience or the sting of sucking, you know, not doing well, you know, I don't, it would be difficult for me to keep doing that.
Well, you know, I've seen people that were in between their fifth and sixth year, couldn't hardly get a laugh at all. And then suddenly they just changed and they finally got it.
But I think that's what we've been talking about through this whole series, is that process that you said you went through it. You were hitting the books and writing the jokes and doing all those things. And then one day the light hit.
Yeah. But here's the thing. I didn't go through a sucky process for a long time.
No, well, what I'm saying is but remember, your background and your experience allowed you to go, I need to regroup. I want to do this. I think this is what I want to do. And you regrouped and went, how do I do this faster? How can I be better at this?
And I was very fortunate from that perspective. There's a lot of comedians, I would say most comedians out there, can't say what I'm able to say. It took them a long time. And see, here's my whole thing. I don't want it, funny people, to take a long time to get a hold of this, especially when you think about what we've been talking about. Dude, I've been talking about people who already developed comedy talent.
Well, Mark Twain, I think one of his famous quotes that I use quite regularly is, you know, learn the easy way by other people's mistakes. Let them make the mistakes and then learn from them. And I think that's what you were able to do really well, because we were on this earth a little longer. You had been in multiple trainings and multiple situations in the military that said, learn now or die.
Well, yeah, there's that.
And, you know, with that experience, I think you took it to stand-up comedy and made it work. Made it work quick and made it work well.
Well, I'll be the first to tell you right now, if I had not been able to make really rapid progress, I would have been done with this. We wouldn't be having this conversation. I mean, it would have been just one of those things that, oh, you know what? I don't get it. Can't do it. Can't reach the performance level that I want. And I'm not satisfied with that. So I'm done. I would have been completely done. I could have walked away.
I think that's what it's one of the parts that I admire about when I hear somebody say they took 5 and 6 and 17 years in order to get to that point. Most people don't do that. Most people go, okay, this wasn't for me.
Make no mistake, persistence is a very important thing in stand-up comedy or any entertainment endeavor. Make no mistake, persistence is vital.
And we hear that from every walk of life, but persistence only works to a certain point. If you're not getting the rewards or you're not getting the feedback that says that you're doing it right, you know, after a while it just wears.
Oh, sure. And then you've got to take a look at something else. I mean, that's for sure. Like I said, my whole thing is I believe that most people have all the talent they need to do well at stand-up comedy if that's what they want to do. I say approach it professionally. Don't half-bake it. Put your heart and soul in it. You know, take a look at some of the, you know, what we've talked about at least in this series and see if it makes sense. You know, like I said, there's no right or wrong way to do stand-up comedy. I just don't want people having to jack around for months and years before they finally get it.
Right. Bring the funny right at the beginning and then just tighten it up.
Absolutely. I mean, start off strong, and boy, that's a great way to start in stand-up comedy, because a lot of people don't start off strong. I'm just going to tell you, they start off less than strong.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of that. And the audience doesn't know this if they hadn't heard of the earlier show, and that's why you need to go back and listen to some of these earlier shows, because Steve, I saw him when he was funny. I've known him. In fact, I knew him during the period of time that he was becoming funny. I didn't know that he was going through a rough period, because when I first basically saw him, he was funny. And then to hear the stories on this show of how he struggled, I went, really? Where was I? And what it was he was not telling anybody when he wasn't funny. Once he became funny.
No, I didn't invite people to the shows. When I was sucking, dude, I had done that already. You know, I already knew. There's no way. I don't want anybody else to know.
And that's actually a good, you know, a great thought there. But I will say it again to the listening audience, that when I saw him the first time, I knew he was funny, because we were educators. I knew that he was funny in the classroom. I knew that he was a great, great entertainer, you know, at a cocktail party. I mean, he was a funny guy. So when I saw him on stage and he was funny and he was killing, I thought that was his beginning. I thought this is always who he was. And to hear that he went through about a year of sucking kind of surprised me.
Yeah, well, it didn't surprise me. It's just, you know, but, you know, I'm glad that that happened. I know I can say that in retrospect, because I'm old and soon I will be croaked.
Well, since I'm older, we're not having that conversation. I don't soon to be anything except on this show for the rest of my life.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. You just keep up with that. Let me tell you what. And you just keep smoking that. Send me some. Because that's obviously really good stuff.
takes away the back pain. Okay.
Yeah, okay. I got you.
All right. Well, let's switch a little bit here. Because, you know, every time that we see these comics and they become popular, they end up on TV. So what about TV appearances for comedians? How does that impact their career?
Well, here's the thing. For a lot of comedians, it is the beginning of the brass rings, the real brass rings. For me, I wasn't interested in TV. I mean, there was a time when I wanted to be the only active duty guy that had their own HBO special. And I saw before I retired that wasn't going to happen. So that was my only ambition for TV, but I didn't really have any ambition to be on TV and those kinds of things. However, let me just do say that racking up TV credits is a very good thing for comedians. A very good thing. And so if you can rack up TV credits, that helps your resume, that will help your income, those types of things. Now, let me give you a flip side to this. There was a time when being on TV as a comedian had a tremendous amount of power. Today, it's different. I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. When Johnny Carson retired in 1992, he commanded 20 million viewers a night. And if you were a comedian and you got on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson and killed that audience, not only killed that audience, but had him ask you over and sit in the chair and have him talk to you impromptu, let me tell you, dude, that made careers. That made careers, comedy careers, for years. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, he was a powerful influence on America entertainment.
And for comedians, that was the ultimate. That was the ultimate to get on the Tonight Show and get called over. And if you want to know some people that you might recognize, Drew Carey's one who got called over. First appearance. And you know, that's not scheduled into the show. That's something that happens outside of what the schedule is for the show. All that stuff is, you know, every bit of any late night show, it's timed out. Every bit of it. So, if he would call you over to sit in a chair and ask you a few questions outside of that, oh my goodness, that was a big deal. Jeff Foxworthy's another one. Gary Shandling's another one. I mean, these people went on there and they nailed it.
Jay Leno?
Jay Leno was actually, he had already been on The Tonight Show and had been the host, the guest host, multiple times.
Yeah, I knew that he'd been guest host, but I wonder what his first appearance, what Johnny thought of him the first time he saw him.
Oh, you know, Joan Rivers. Joan Rivers is another one who just nailed it on there. But that was at a time, this is the early 90s when he retired, 20 million viewers. Now, you take where we've gone to through today. If a comedian can get on Comedy Central, on a stand-up comedy show on Comedy Central, if they can get on a multiple show on Showtime or HBO where they have multiple comedians, and the reason I say that is because usually with stand-up comedy, you only see the biggest names get that hour special, right? If you think about it, you know, or people that are super up-and-coming, that kind of thing. Something like that, you're going to be seen by hundreds of thousands of people. Do you get the difference? So here's the deal with TV and comedians, if you want to just get right down to the brass tacks. Once you get on TV, you need to be on TV as often as you can be on TV, because it takes multiple exposures for people to start to recognize you and for you to develop a following. And those types of things, for people to know who you are. You need multiple Tonight Show appearances. You need multiple Late Night with Jimmy Fallon or whoever, Jimmy Kimmel or whoever the people are. That's going to get your face in front of more and more audiences. And you have to do that today. I mean, dude, here's the deal. On cable TV, you have a hit, mega hit show, if you can hit 4 million viewers. Okay, do you understand the difference here?
Yeah.
That's a mega hit show, not a stand-up comedy thing. So the audience dynamics as far as watching TV and those kinds of things has changed. And what does it have to do with? It has to do with this proliferation of channels that offer content. And so there, you got all these different channels competing for X amount of eyeballs.
Well, let me bring up a point that I don't know if we've talked about. I think we hit on it in one other show for a little bit. But TV also, let's Johnny Carson, we'll use him. One exposure, half the world saw you. So you have to have new material next time you come out.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And keep this in mind, too, before you continue with your question. You had to submit word for word exactly what you were going to say. Word for word. I mean, there could be no deviations with that. And that gets approved, and they would tell you what to take out and what you know, if you had to go back and forth with them in order to get enough material to do their 6.5 minutes or whatever it is. Right. You know what I'm saying?
But you're done with that. That material's done. If you had that big audience.
Yeah, you're not coming back. You're not coming back with that. Not in that format, not on that program, and not on any program.
Right, because everybody's already seen it, and it's telling the joke for a second
time. Well, just put yourself in the late night chair. You know, let's say you got a late night program. Do you want somebody doing the exact same stand-up comedy bit that they did on another late night show?
Yeah, and that's exactly what I'm saying. That was exposure. Now with lesser exposure and all these different channels, and very few people are, like you said, we're hitting a much lower number, but it's a mega goddamn number in viewing audience today. So can they almost use the same material now, some of the same material, because they're just not seeing
Well, you could totally use the same material. For example, if you did a late night bit that's 6 or 7 minutes long, but then you go and get your own comedy special that's an hour long, which can happen. Well, could you do the 6 or 7 minutes amongst the rest? Of course you could.
You've got
to be smart about what you're doing. But what I'm trying to relate here is the audience dynamic from a TV point of view for a comedian, and a comedian who's interested in TV definitely needs to rack up as many TV credits as they can and try out for every single thing that they can, because it matters. It matters, you know, when people introduce you. It matters with your comedy resume. It affects your pay. It provides credence to who you are as a comedian. It gives you credibility. Yada, yada, yada. I mean, you can just go on and on with that. So, you know, is TV a big deal? Now, I speak from TV as an observer of other comedians who have done TV, of the industry as a whole. Not as somebody who pursued TV. I don't have any TV credits. None. I did everything that I did without an agent, a manager, no TV credits, nothing. And I worked my butt off all the time.
Yeah, and that's an important part, that you were making a good living doing stand-up comedy, but you're working. You're working. And if you're not working, you're not getting paid.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, I just, once I got going, man, I just worked every single month and made good money every single month. And this was on a part-time basis. Over half my comedy career, I was in the Navy.
I know.
And we talked about this, how the Navy doesn't really care what your comedy career is.
And they'll take you away quickly if you're not paying.
Yeah, well, they take you away. You know, somebody could blow somebody else up someplace else, and then you're gone. Your comedy career is like, woo, God. Listen, I got to go on deployment. I'm done.
Yeah, those, I no longer am booked in those shows. With that said, then, sneaking back into the television side of things, that also commands a higher, when you've got TV credits, it also ends up being able to demand a higher salary from comedy.
Well, yeah, you know, it's a process, you know, as you go along and you develop, your reputation develops, your comedy resume develops, the types of appearances that you have made develops. Well, it just continues to go along that way. You know, there's really no overnight sensations, not in stand-up comedy. It takes time. But
you know, I love that you said that, because I think there's an appearance, there's a belief that there's an overnight sensation. You know, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Roseanne Barr popped up with some of the greatest comedy ever. But that's because of the exposure.
Oh, but they don't talk about the 5 or 6 years before she had that act.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And she's one that's admitted it took her a long time. But all of a sudden, as far as, you know, somebody tapped you on the shoulder and go, did you see that Roseanne Barr? She, God, this woman's funny. Or, and now today with social media, they just send you a little clip. Hey, take a look at this. So things definitely have changed.
Well, let me tell you, you know, you mentioned social media, and I've got to chime in here. Dude, if I had social media the way people have it today when I started stand-up comedy, because there was no YouTube, there was no Facebook, there was no Twitter, there was no Instagram, there was no Pinterest, there was none of this stuff. But if I had that today, I mean, when I started stand-up comedy, if I had that, oh my goodness, man, I would have been all over that like a bad rash. Because I learned early on the value of a following, an audience. And man, there are people, there are comedians, and we've talked about this. The term is called ghetto famous. And what that is someone who has such a social media following that if they're performing at a show, they can fill up a room from putting a post on Facebook or Twitter or all of the above. That's powerful. That is something that entertainers. It doesn't matter if it's comedians. I'm talking about musicians, bands, singers. They never had that before.
Well, I'm gonna use that because you actually had email. Email. And yet you had a following with email. In fact, I remember getting an email blast that you were performing somewhere you hadn't been in a while. And, you know, of course I showed up. But then I looked around and a whole lot of others showed up. The same group of people that were following your career. Navy friends.
Yeah,
neighborhood friends,
you know what? That email was crude. It was, I know. It was nothing. I mean, that was just like, man, you had to go through a whole laundry list and email people individually and all that kind of stuff. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I remember. I know what you're talking about. That was a nightmare, whereas that whole situation has changed. That can be easily, man.
Well, I know that today I can make – in fact, I just did this. I did a post of my granddaughter, my new granddaughter. I'll give her a little plug right now. Juniper, 3 months old. She's smiling at Grandpa. I do a little selfie with her. Send that on Facebook to my friends and family to see Juniper. And I got like 70 hits. Boom, boom, boom. If people, you know, they just – the babies really hit. So if I had something else to offer, you can see how that can just go.
Oh, well, you know, that audiences, you know, and I had said this before, audiences make a comedian famous or not so much. And, man, if you can develop a following, oh, I mean, I was very lucky in my time, in my situation, where I was teaching traffic school. I could pass out tickets to a show. I was in the Navy. I could go to multiple commands and say, hey, here's 10 free tickets for your top performers, you know, at the command to come to the comedy show, treat them, that kind of thing. I mean, I was very lucky from that respect. But, man, comedians have such, and other entertainers, too, have such an advantage with the internet and social media and that kind of thing, especially if you can deliver the goods. Goodness.
Yeah,
it's just amazing.
I see it every day. It is amazing how quickly someone can be known for something that may or may not be flattering, but they're known. They're known quickly.
Well, I'm not saying you need to do something that's not flattering just to get attention.
Yeah,
I mean, please don't just go out there and post naked pictures and that kind of thing. Please, not because of this radio program. Ron, you're held hostage here as far as anything that happens. I'm held harmless.
You got it. But let me go to something else. The words you used, to have a following. Well, on Facebook, there's actually a spot there that says, follow me.
Well, on
actually there.
On Facebook, you know, you don't just necessarily need, you know, have your personal page. That they have it where you can set up your own professional page that's about you, your stand-up comedy. I mean, that's what I have. I have my personal Facebook page, and then I have my Facebook page that's for stand-up comedy education. You know, I'm past the active performing thing. I've retired, but I'm just telling you, man, as a entertainer, live entertainer, stand-up comedian, I would have been all over social media.
And I think what you're saying is you're recommending that new comedians embrace social media and get involved, understand it, use it.
Well, why not? It's free.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, I don't know anything cheaper than free.
Yeah, you're true. And you know what? We often used to say that the value of something was based on the money, so free isn't very valuable. But my God, I can actually say that Facebook has done some things in my life that I didn't even know was possible. Now, I'm going to use Facebook, but I should say social media in general. But I just went to a reunion with all of my submarine buddies, and those that don't know, I was on a submarine. So, you know, there's a part of me that is a little different than most human beings. But that we got together in Las Vegas over nothing but Facebook. All of a sudden, we started finding each other again and said, you know, we ought to get together and have a good time. And we did. We did. So the power of that is just phenomenal. And I, you know, I don't know how difficult. Well, I do know. Like I said, you had email. And that was about the technology of the time to create a following. Now a following, you press a button and you have a following. Follow me.
Well, you're able to engage these folks, let them know what you're doing. And people need to understand that as an entertainer, you've already got a built-in interest factor. And especially as a comedian, think about this. How many people out there in the world are doing stand-up comedy and doing it at any decent level? I mean, come on. Can there be any better interest factor than that?
Yeah, we could probably do a whole show on social media.
Yeah, I think social media is a big deal if a comedian will take advantage of it. And that's the big thing. I mean, a lot of people have this kind of what I think is a backwards approach. It's like, I don't want to deal with any of that. I just want to perform. Well, as a comedian, you're your own business entity. You need to take interest in your business, and especially if you want to get paid for this stuff and you want to develop a following. Of course you do. I mean, think about this, Ron. We talked about TV shows. Wouldn't you want to have the biggest Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, whatever following you could to say, hey, look, I'm going to be on TV. Think about it, man.
I know. And then it's, hey, I know this guy. And the referrals, the other side of it. Yeah, it's just got to be an enormous push for a career.
Oh.
If you're good.
Well, the thing, there's that. But the thing about it is there's people that are super funny out there that don't have this whole social media thing down. So there you go.
Well, Steve, we've run out of time. But there's much more to come, so don't miss the next episode when we reveal more stand-up comedy secrets for beginners.